high and persistent unemployment has ratcheted up the poverty rates in the U.S. and Ohio. 2 years ago, on 56 occasions, there were no beds in the regular shelters for families, compared to last year when that was the case more than 3,300 times. Spending on overflow shelter by the Community Shelter Board increased by 5,000% this year over just last year. There's shelter, and then there's food. The food pantries across Central Ohio are struggling to keep up, and suburban communities such as Dublin, Pickerington, and Worthington have seen the fastest growing need for food assistance. Joining us to talk about what charities are doing and how you can help is Lisa Hamler-Fugit. She's the executive director of the Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks. Welcome back, Lisa. Also, Michelle Heritage, the executive director of the Community Shelter Board. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you.
And Bill Faith, the executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Nice to be here, Ann.
For our listeners, do you have an idea to help feed and house those in need in Central Ohio? Give us a call or send us an email and share your ideas. We want to find things that people can do over the holidays and throughout the holidays and maybe even throughout the year if you have some ideas about that. So give us a call, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your idea or comment there. Have you been, and to other listeners, have you been without housing and enough food? And has someone helped you? Give us a call and tell us what helps. 614-292-8513. Bill Faith, last week the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio and Homeful of Dayton joined forces to call on state and federal lawmakers to protest budget decisions that could force more people into poverty and housing insecurity. What programs are most in peril out there?
Well, part of what's happening is, you know, if you look at what's going on the homeless front across the state, there's really three big things that are causing a big spike in the numbers. One is this persistent high unemployment, mm-hmm. as you mentioned. The other thing is that there's just a big disconnect between what people make, those that are lucky enough to have a job, and what it costs to rent even a basic two-bedroom apartment. Here in Franklin County, that rent, according to the fair market rent, is $779 a month. That means you'd have to have a full-time job at $15 an hour. And a lot of people make more than that, but there's plenty of people that make less. So other needs of that family, other needs of that household suffer. And at times, it gets to the point where they just can't get the rent paid. Mm-hmm. And the third factor that's really contributing now to the rise that we're seeing is President Obama was smart enough in his stimulus package. It's a program that not a lot of people talk about as part of the stimulus. But we had $65 million from the stimulus package in Ohio alone to address homelessness prevention activities. That money came when the stimulus, you know, shortly after the stimulus package passed, and communities have done a great job of getting that money out. That really helped our numbers stay down, but that money's gone. And so when you look at what the feds are doing in particular, it just in the last couple of weeks, they passed the HUD, the Housing Urban Development's budget for next year. And they slashed housing programs left and right. So affordable housing, the access to affordable housing is going to be harder to get over the next year as a result of that. Homeless programs, they'd also get federal funds. They were maintained at last year's level. So no increase, despite the fact that all over the country, organizations that serve homeless folks were reporting big numbers. So really, it's the cuts in the loss prevention dollars. The federal government, the Congress did nothing to make up for that. Flat funding for the regular program. So we have no way other than what individuals and private funds could do to address the growing demand. And that's a difficult position. A lot of people are tight on their own budgets. Mm-hmm. Charitable giving has dropped in many cases. We've seen examples of generosity, no doubt, but people are squeezed. The organizations that are serving the people in need are squeezed. And a growing number of people who've never even thought about being homeless mm-hmm. before are now experiencing homelessness for the first time.
Michelle Heritage, I mentioned earlier that 2 years ago on 56 occasions there were no beds in the regular shelters for families compared to last year, when that increased to more than 3,300 times. Where do people go when that happens? What are we talking about? What is that circumstance and where are they going?
Well, here's the beautiful thing about Columbus and Franklin County is this community made a commitment many years ago that no family will ever be on the street. We shelter any family that presents and needs shelter. So what we have to do is we find places inside of our shelters in the gymnasium. We move the tables back that people eat at during the day, and we put cots up and make sure that we've got a place for everyone to stay. We have been over capacity now. We call it overflow for our second year in a row. And the costs, frankly, are staggering. We last year went up having a constant state of overflow, thinking that, okay, this is our new reality. And then we went up from there. And we had at times during the summer more than 62, 67 families over our capacity that we were trying to find spaces for. And what I can say, I do want to go back just a little bit and talk about those stimulus dollars. Mm-hmm. Those stimulus dollars have allowed the Community Shelter Board to focus on prevention and rapid rehousing. Because the bottom line is, shelter does not solve homelessness. Only housing solves homelessness. We saw in our single adult system over the last year and a half, the highest levels of successful housing outcomes, all attributable to those stimulus dollars, to us rehousing people. What I can tell you is, when we get someone stably rehoused, the chances that they're going to come back and have to go through the shelter system again are extremely low. Under 10% on our family side and about 17% on our single side.
Even with the unemployment problem.
That's exactly right. What we find is getting people out of shelter, giving them a hand up, and getting them stably rehoused, the chances they're going to have to use the homeless system again are very, very low. So those dollars work. Housing works as the answer to ending homelessness. We also were able to, on the single side, for example, prevent more than 500 people from having to come in the shelter system specifically because of those dollars. As of next year, on July 1st, $1.5 million goes away in our community, and we don't have any ability to replace those, as the need continues to climb, both for single adults and families needing shelter.
So if the community's made the pledge, though, that no one will ever go without, where's the money going to come from?
That's a great question. The shelter board recently ran some scenarios. We ran our most hopeful scenario and one of our worst case scenarios. Just for family shelter overflow alone, we need to find somewhere between $300,000 and $1.3 million. In addition to that, we have to power up our direct housing providers because we've got to get folks out of shelter. We need to make sure we're continuing to focus on housing. And so we're going to have extra dollars that we're going to need there. We are actually convening at the end of this month our private funder community and presenting to them a strategic and planful way that we're looking at this as a system response. How are we going to, as a community, continue to respond to this need? And frankly, the Community Shelter Board is developing some very innovative models about getting folks rehoused and keeping them from having to come in the system.
Yeah, and I want to get back to that in a little while. Lisa Hamler-Fugit, you mentioned earlier before we went on the air that unemployment payments are going to stop for a lot of people too, and that's something you're bracing for.
Absolutely. We are really frightened as the super committee failed on Monday to reach a compromise. Part of what we fear is that the 99ers, those who have been on unemployment for a period of 99 weeks, will start to exhaust all unemployment benefits. And in fact, in the first month of January, or the first month of 2012, January, we'll see more people lose their unemployment benefits in the state of Ohio than lost their unemployment benefits in all of 2011. And in fact, 44% of the unemployed who are being served by a local food pantry report that they've been out of employment for more than 2 years. So again, it's jobs. We desperately need jobs. And it is going to take an act of Congress to extend those benefits. We are also seeing, again, in our system, record demand. Agencies have been rationing food. They are turning individuals away. And we, too, have been significantly impacted by the loss of stimulus dollars within our system. In fact, we've seen federal commodities decline by some 30% as a result. At the same time, we've got rapidly rising food costs, rising demand on our system, and this transportation, lack of transportation and fuel, certainly for our semis. Diesel still at $4 a gallon, which is putting a greater strain on all of our food banks.
Jane and Blacklick, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jane.
Hi.
Hi.
I would like to address the need for food. I moved from Bainbridge Island, Washington, before I moved to this area. And outside every grocery store, we had these big bins where we could put in food for our homeless shelter. And I found that a great source of reminding me to do that. So when I would go through the grocery store, I would buy extra food, and then I'd put it in the bin. I don't find that here in Columbus, not very often. Has that been explored?
Yeah, you used to be able to get $5 or $10 or $20 bags of groceries that you could kind of buy as you were walking out of the store. Lisa?
All of our local retailers do run campaigns. Unfortunately, they don't run campaigns year-round. It's a great idea. Certainly, again, our grocers have been extremely generous. But they're also reporting the same thing. Their sales are down. And it's very interesting to see when food stamp benefits or SNAP benefits are loaded at the beginning of the month, stores are reporting that they're having trouble now managing their staffing levels because the grocery stores are often full at midnight on the 1st, where people are literally desperate. They have exhausted all of their food stamp benefits. So, again, I want to say that our grocery community is extremely generous, and we'll look into that, replicating that idea.
Just a thought on that. Why would it be their generosity? Why isn't it my generosity buying the groceries and just putting it in a bin? I wouldn't know what cost it would be to the grocery store for me to be buying groceries and putting them in a bin.
It's really all of us working together. And again, retailers are seeing that their sales are down. Central Ohioans, as Michelle said, all Ohioans are extremely generous in their giving. And retail pickup is a significant part of what we are distributing through the Emergency Food Assistance Network, where the grocers are pulling day-old product. That represents about 20% of everything that we distribute statewide.
Okay.
And I think one of the campaigns that's happening right now that you can get involved in is that Kroger is doing a rounding up, and you can round up your grocery bill. And that money's donated to Mid-Ohio Food Bank. I do know for Mid-Ohio Food Bank, quite a bit of what they need is just donations that are financial donations. Mm-hmm. They can actually buy food product at a very good price if we give financial donations.
But I think Jane made the good point. And Jane, by the way, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you.
Yeah. Jane made a good point, though, as far as the reminder thing. It's you get reminded that there's still a need out there. And I know that you can get more bang for your buck if the Mid-Ohio Food Bank or if Second Harvest has cash.
That's correct.
But
cash is king.
Yeah, cash is king.
We are purchasing directly from food manufacturers. We are clearing surplus from Ohio farmers, growers, and commodity producers. A good example of peanut butter. Peanut butter has now reached an all-time high. It is being cut from our system. I think peanut butter is a staple. Everybody recognizes that, where we were able to purchase peanut butter at less than a dollar for an 18-ounce jar. It's now up to $3. So cash donations are always welcome. It allows us to purchase again in quantities that are sufficient to keep our shelf stocked.
We are talking about the two greatest needs right now, two basic needs, housing and food. if you have an idea for and something that you've been doing and you think would work, or you want to make a suggestion to other listeners out there about how they can help people who are in need of food and housing, give us a call, 614-292-8513. My guests are Michelle Heritage of the Community Shelter Board, Lisa Hamler-Fugit of the Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks, and also Bill Faith of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. We'll be right back with your calls and some emails when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and you can listen to our station anytime by streaming on the web. Just visit WOSU.org and click on the Listen Now button at the top of the page. Listen to local and national news from your computer or mobile device. Just visit WOSU.org.
Support for 89.7 comes from Catco, presenting Souvenir, a comedy about a New York socialite aspiring to be a singer and yet can't even hold a note. On stage November 22nd through December 11th at the Rife Center. Tickets and details at catco.org.
Cloudy skies with some sunshine later this afternoon, a high of 50 degrees. Currently 42 degrees in downtown Columbus. Mostly clear skies for tonight, a low of 30. Sunny skies on Thanksgiving Day, a high of 56. Clear skies for Thursday night, a low of 38. And looking ahead to Friday, sunshine and a high of 60. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about housing and food shortages around the holidays. Of course, this has been going on all year and for several years in a row now. It's nothing new, but we know that people like to help, particularly around the holidays, and we want to tap into that goodwill. So 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org and let us know what you think. Martin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I just want to talk about a situation. I have a rental property. I've had a tenant that's been there for 6 years now, and he was a very successful business person. He developed a brain tumor, and basically he's going to die from this, and it's so severe that if he falls down, he has a button so people can come and pick him up, and there is no place for him to go. The state of Ohio keeps denying him disability. I've let him live in the property for over 2 years rent free, but really that constitutes almost 50% of my income to support him. And I just think that the system, there's something so messed up when the system will keep denying him disability, I think hoping he'll die and go away.
Well, Martin, you know, that brings up an interesting point, the relationship between homelessness and healthcare benefits and food and healthcare benefits. Bill, to what extent does the cost of healthcare contribute to the problem?
Well, it's a huge cost. And Martin, I appreciate your generosity with your tenant. That's a pretty unusual thing to see. And you can imagine how a guy like that would find great difficulty if he were out on the streets and navigating the homeless system. And the other point about your story is, even if he got on disability, you know, like SSI, I mean, right now disability benefits are $674 a month. And an average or a fair market rent on a one-bedroom apartment in Franklin County is $566. So that even if he got on disability, he would have a grand, you know, like $120 beyond what his disability benefit would provide after he pays his rent. So it's a big deal. We actually have a project to help people navigate the disability system who are having difficulties. We have a lot of people that are homeless that are, you know, from our point of view, are clearly disabled, mental health issues, other kinds of physical issues that require, I mean, that make them unable to work. and are clearly, they're clearly disabled. So we work on doing outreach for just assisting people to navigate the SSI system and the state's system of approving disability. But it is a real struggle for anybody in that situation to be able to have any kind of income to afford the rent.
And Michelle, you were talking about new people. This guy's new to this existence. Tell us a little bit about that issue and what you grapple with in terms of people who have never been homeless before.
We're seeing an interesting trend happening in the homeless system. I think that for a lot of folks, they have an idea about who's a homeless, quote unquote, and they think that, you know, it's that person that's on the street asking them for money, and they have, you know, severe mental, you know, health issues or substance use and those kinds of things. And what we know is at any one time in our shelter system, that's about 15% of the folks. They've got multiple barriers to housing. They've got maybe some disabling conditions, some credit problems, maybe some problems with the justice or prison, jail in their past. But that's about 15%. And we know what to do to help those folks. Those folks need to be in a permanent supportive housing environment. That leaves the rest of the folks, which is 80-85%. And those are folks that are having a housing crisis. We're finding that most of the families entering the shelter system have never used shelter before. That's 62% are presenting, and we look back the last decade and have never used our services. For single women coming into our shelter system, 53% have never, ever accessed shelter before. And for us, that's an alarming statistic. We're seeing people who have maybe been very close to the edge, but they are falling off the edge of that cliff into homelessness. That is not a trend that we want to continue in our community.
And Lisa Hamler, if you get, I was reading the statistic that Ohio has the fifth highest hunger bill in the United States. And before I could even write down the question, how do we know that and how much is it a function of population? I saw that 78% of that bill is from hunger-related illness.
That's correct. And what we're seeing more and more are individuals who are suffering from diet-related diseases such as diabetes, hypertension, renal failure, that those diseases have to be managed with diet. And time again, not only are our clients telling us the only access to food that they have is what they're getting through their local food pantry or soup kitchen, but the doctors are so frustrated that Medicaid and Medicare will reimburse them for literally thousands of dollars worth of prescription medication when they know that what their clients need is access to wholesome food. I also want to say to Martin, there is help available. Bill talked about it through the Ohio Benefits Bank by calling 1-800-648-1176. We can help your tenant start the Medicaid application process or visiting the website www.ohiobenefits.org. We have assistance with 20-plus programs, including Medicaid, Social Security, disability. The other thing that I do want to say about the hunger bill, we all pay for it. In the state alone this year, our state government will spend $18.8 billion on Medicaid cost alone. And it's time that we put prevention front and center instead of treating diseases that, you know, it's not a prescription that people need who have diabetes. They need access to wholesome food.
And I just want to add my voice to the chorus that says thank you to Martin. Roy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Roy.
Thank you. Thank you. I do this work, and sometimes Social Security.
Okay.
Work. And I know a lot of lawyers for free get people started, and they don't charge them to show them how to get in the system. If he's just been a successful businessman, there's a great possibility he has enough quarters to get SSD. Also, if he is into Netcare, he gets a social worker, he seems like he qualifies for Medicaid, so he ought to be able to get his medical care, and then he should go into the Social Security system. What a lot of people fail to do is when they lose at the first or stage or the reconsideration stage, they don't appeal it, and they sort of give up at that point. He's got to stay in there. If he has enough quarters on SSD and he's a successful businessman, you know, his SSD should be enough to pay the rent.
Okay.
And the basic the needs of life. And if he is disabled and he has enough for quarters, he can get on Medicaid, Medicare, in which he would have both systems. So something is going wrong with this gentleman, and with the proper guidance, I think if he's not getting any medical care, not getting any money, that can be straightened out.
Thanks, Roy, for your call. And let's repeat that phone call where people can go for help if they're having these kinds of issues. Lisa?
Contacting the Benefit Bank at 1-800-648-1176 or visit the website www.ohiobenefits.org. Also, I want to say the systems are overwhelmed. What we've seen as a result of state and federal budget cuts, caseloads are at an all-time high. One out of every five Ohioans is on Medicaid. One out of every six Ohioans are on food stamp or SNAP assistance at a time we've seen frontline caseworker reduction at more than 20% or 40%. So the wait times are long, but right, don't give up. There is help available, and certainly
can I give my number off?
Yeah,
the air?
Sure. We'll
and
have
if,
a.
And if you want him to call me, I'll help him get into the system.
Okay.
That'll be my holiday gift. So
okay. Wonderful. Thank you, Roy. We'll ask Martin, who has the gentleman whose rent he's covered for the last couple years as a landlord. Martin, if you want to call back in and get connected with Roy, he is a lawyer and he's offering to help Martin, your tenant. So thank you, Roy, and thanks, Martin. We have Steve in the North End. He says, it doesn't help homelessness that the Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority is tearing down thousands of houses and apartments. Why is this happening when so many people need shelter? Who wants to? Michelle Heritage?
Actually, Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority is an amazing partner with the Community Shelter Board. And what they are doing is a strategy of allowing people to have choice where they would like to live. You know, back in the day, we used to build these giant apartment complexes and we would put everyone in there. And what we found is that people do better. They're more successful. They stay stably housed when they can have a choice as to where they'd like to live. And so it's not that the Metropolitan Housing Authority is tearing these down and not giving other opportunities for folks to continue to have rent subsidy. They're just giving them the opportunity to have choice where they'd like to live.
Email from Angel. She says, how about people inviting a poor family to their home for Thanksgiving? My family lived in Reynoldsburg, and we could have had a family come over. My mother always cooked more food than we could eat in one day. My father would even have gone to pick them up. I know people would have safety concerns, but it's a chance my family would have taken. Are there opportunities for families to do that, Lisa, if they want?
Certainly. We are seeing more and more of this. I think during this unending Great Recession, we're all touched, whether it's a neighbor, a family, a friend, someone who has lost a job or had their hours cut at work. It is important. And again, being a generous community, a generous state, reaching out to your neighbors and inviting them in. We're hearing more of this. You know, I describe it as hunger is just six doors down. Anyone can be suffering from hunger, and it's very different from homelessness. While hunger and homelessness are both symptoms of poverty, we all know someone, and we really need to reach out and offer assistance. People are embarrassed, certainly the new poor that Michelle talked about, and we're seeing this in the suburbs. So, again, always be mindful that you may not actually see it, but oftentimes all resources have been exhausted, and offer your assistance, offer your friendship.
Bill, Faith, what's the difference between homelessness and an urban metropolitan area like Columbus and one that's what we think of as more rural, like, say, Findlay?
Well, it's really just all a matter of scale. I mean, the reality is in the rural areas, they actually have less of a system to really deal with people that have fallen through the cracks entirely. Our urban areas have all of our urban areas in the state have developed a system to try to address the issue in a coordinated approach. Often in a place like Findlay, you'll have one program, one nonprofit that offers shelter. And in fact, I know the folks up in Findlay and have talked to them recently. They've seen the same thing that Michelle's seen with the community shelter boards, nonprofits here in Franklin County. But they don't have a way to deal with overflow. So in Findlay, they have to just say, no, I'm sorry, we're full. and people are turned away. And that's families. The group I know works with families. They'll have a waiting list so that if somebody moves out of the shelter or they've used prevention dollars, although they're out of prevention dollars now. So they basically just have to turn people away and set up a waiting list. And in fact, the director of the Finley Hope House just recently told me that her waiting list is higher today than at any time in the 20 years that she's worked there. I mean, they've never seen the kind of numbers. And Finley is not as poor of a community as many of our rural communities are.
Right.
So, I mean, they basically have less resources. They don't have a Columbus Foundation. They don't have a lot of other institutions to rely on for help. They're largely dependent on state and federal resources for what they do, and those are all being reduced. So they really have greater difficulty than their urban counterparts.
In the social service field, many of us have been doing this for a long time, and it is the perfect storm. We are in uncharted waters as we look at our data month over month, quarter over quarter, and year over year. We have never seen these kinds of statistics, so it's very hard to draw some kind of trends other than to say that these are basic needs that must be met. And there is no better tool than a job that pays a living wage. The other side of this equation that we need to look at are the seniors. I'm starting to call it now the Walton effect, where it's the seniors who are taking in their adult children, who are bringing in their adult children and often their great-grandchildren. So we're seeing these very large household demographic sizes. And that's happening because it's the senior, maybe on a Social Security or a retirement benefit. That's the only income, and they are really the anchor to that family.
And we find, for folks that are coming into shelter, both on the single side and on the family side, virtually all of them are coming from what we call doubled up. So they have already used all the resources they've had.
They've already hit up all their friends and family, that kind of a thing.
And many times it's because the friends and family they're staying with are also very close to being on the edge, and they can't afford to keep them any longer. One of the innovative strategies we're developing right now is there a way that we could do some sort of kinship care? Could we either prevent someone from coming into the homeless system by helping keep that family stabilized that is doubled up? Or can we get that family back in with their family members? And can we help them be stabilized by helping with a monthly stipend, for example, or maybe helping get in there with some case management, connecting to benefits, connecting to work, those kinds of things? I mean, we've got to come up with innovative strategies. There's no doubt about it. We've got to think differently about the things. And frankly, for the shelter board, we've said we're going to start to do it. We love to study. We love to get the data. We love to turn the research around 1,000 times. But the consequences of failing to act in this environment are grave.
We're talking about food and housing shortages now during our fourth year, is it something, or our going on to our fourth year of the Great Recession. We talked about this 1 year, 2 years ago with Lisa and Bill, and now Michelle Heritage has joined us from the Community Shelter Board. Everything they said would happen is happening. It's no surprise. We're just talking about what we can do about it now and maybe during the holidays what we can do. If you have an idea, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And coming up is going to join the conversation E.J. Thomas, the CEO for Habitat for Humanity of Greater Columbus, serving Franklin County. He's going to tell us about their need during the Thanksgiving holiday right now. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Supporting 89.7 NPR News is easier than ever when you become a sustaining member. Sign up online at wosu.org/sustainer. As a sustaining member, your donation is automatic, monthly, and ongoing. No more letters in the mail, and your WOSU member card will renew automatically. Every year, we'll confirm your membership, and you can cancel at any time. For as little as $5 per month, you'll be supporting the programs you love. Become a sustaining member now at WOSU.org/sustainer.
This is 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins. The real history of the Pilgrims and the First Thanksgiving. With Don't Know Much About History author Ken Davis. That discussion begins at 11. And be sure to visit WOSU.org/allsides for the latest updates from All Sides with Ann Fisher. From our website, you can listen and watch the show live weekdays from 10 until noon. You can also explore the All Sides archive, which includes audio and video of every show. And be sure to like All Sides on Facebook and follow Ann on Twitter at AnnFisherWOSU. 42 degrees and cloudy skies in downtown Columbus. We should see some sunshine, though, warming up to a high of 50 degrees today. Clear skies tonight, a low of 30. Sunshine for Thanksgiving Day and a high of 56. Clear skies Thursday night, a low of 38. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about food and housing right now for the holidays and for the recession. Joining us now, E.J. Thomas. He's CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Greater Columbus, serving Franklin County. And E.J., I saw in the paper today and was so glad we were able to get you on board for the show to tell us what Habitat for Humanity in Franklin County needs right now.
Well, thank you, Ann. I'm delighted to be on and share with your listeners that we are on our way to completing 22 houses this year. It's a record for us for the Greater Columbus affiliate in any given year. And as we close in on the end of the year, we've got four houses that we're wanting to complete by mid-December. And in order to do that, we need volunteers. As many of your listeners know, we have lots of volunteers who come out and help us with each house to the tune of about 2,700 hours on average in order to complete one.
And how many are you having a shortage of volunteers right now? Is there a downtick for you, or you just have more ambitious plans than usual?
I'll go with B.
Okay.
That's my final answer. No, we are really blessed to have wonderful volunteers who help us all year round. We had a very strong Winter Warrior program starting at the beginning of this year, and Deb Light, our volunteer director, does a fabulous job of helping slot folks in. But with an ambitious schedule that we've got this year, and that will continue to grow, there's a greater need for more volunteers.
Now, I've posted the link to your website, EJ, as well as the links to all the websites from the folks that we're talking to today. Is that all people have to do to get involved? They can go to that? Or is there a phone number as well that you could give us on the air?
Sure, absolutely. I can give you a phone number. The website will always work. Okay. But 364-7020 will get you right into the volunteer directorate, and that's Deb Light's number.
364-7020, and you can go online to WOSU.org/allsides, and you can get a link to each and every one of the organizations that we're talking about and talking with today. An email from Robert, he says, regarding locations to drop off food besides at grocery stores, the Worthington Food Pantry has drop-off locations at Worthington Libraries and the Community Center. I think other food pantries also have such drop-off locations. And once a week, I pick up food from one of the libraries and from a local market and deliver it to the Worthington Pantry. The mileage I drive in doing this is itemized as a tax deduction on my federal tax return. Very good, Robert. Thank you so much for that call. Bruce in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bruce.
Hey, thanks. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if there's any agencies duplicating the Victory Garden campaign of World War II, where folks were encouraged and instructed on successful gardening for the war effort.
Let's hear. Thanks, Bruce.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We have seen more effort, energy, and work being done in communities across the state doing community gardens, certainly at our settlement houses. We've seen it on parkland here in central Ohio. That's part of the solution. We also run a program called Plant a Row for the Hungry, where backyard gardeners can put in a couple of extra rows and donate that to a local food pantry or soup kitchen. But here again, that's part of the solution. It's not the complete solution.
Say, E.J. Thomas, as far as looking for volunteers for this weekend and to get these houses built before Christmas, what kind of skills should does somebody need? What are you looking for?
That's a question I'm often asked, and folks really don't need to have any particular skills when they first come to us. We have on-site leadership that will help the volunteers who are there for the day work a particular effort that needs to be accomplished. So we do everything from framing all the way through to the finish and putting on trim. And so depending on the day, the crew leads that are there working with a group of 6 to 8 volunteers will provide some training and get folks started. That includes putting siding on the side of the house. So what's fun for volunteers that has come back to me as feedback is that many times they'll come not knowing how to do a particular task, finish at the end of the day, and go home and be able to do it on their own home.
So, Bill and EJ, how do you guys, I mean, to what extent does something like Habitat for Humanity help staunch the bleeding, Bill?
Well, EJ's a great guy and a great Habitat leader. He's one of the best in the state. And I actually serve on the Ohio Habitat for Humanity board with EJ. He's the board chairman. And he's a great leader. But EJ is really kicking butt to get 22 houses done, right? I mean, he's really taking the local Habitat effort to new heights. But at the end of the day, he's doing 22 houses this year. If he really kicks butt next year, maybe he gets that to 30 or 40. So, I mean, for me, all of these efforts that are volunteer-driven, charity-driven, are fabulous, and it's a good way for people to get involved and help in a very personal way. But it doesn't replace the need for sound public policy to deal with these issues. I mean, somebody called a little bit ago and talked about, why is CMHA tearing down a bunch of the public housing? Well, their funds to support that public housing has been systematically reduced to the point where it's not cost effective. They can't pay their bills and operate the housing that way. And this is a conscious decision by our political leadership to not invest properly in the needs of people that have housing issues, people that have hunger, people that need health care. And that's got to be changed. I mean, we have to make sure as we go about balancing our budget, reducing the deficit, that we do it in a way that protects the most vulnerable Ohioans and most vulnerable Americans. I think that's possible to do. There's a lot of other areas of spending that can share in the pain. But when it comes to those who have no other options, we need to keep up our investment in those kinds of programs.
And I want to also just echo what Bill's saying. I 100% agree, as usual, with everything he's saying. The lack of affordable housing in our community is one of the main causes of homelessness. And we need to develop more affordable housing, both subsidized housing and also shallow subsidies and affordable housing. We need to really focus on that in this community. That is the long-term solution. Housing ends homelessness. This community has an opportunity to end homelessness. We know what to do. We have the national model. It's recognized everywhere. I don't know if people know that folks fly in from all over the country to see how we're doing it here. But we have to have affordable housing. It is the end game to ending homelessness.
And ours is a little bit different program. And Bill, thank you for your comments. And it's great having Bill on the board. Of course, you never know quite where he is on an issue.
He's so wishy-washy, isn't he?
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah, our mission is one of taking families one at a time and empowering them in a way to own their own home when there's no other way for them to afford to be able to do that. You know, we work with the 30 to 50% average median income families. So for a family of four, that tops out at $32,500. And it's tough to raise a family on that and also even consider owning a home. So we're taking folks out of substandard housing in accordance with HUD guidelines and putting them in their own home. Now, this is a hand up, not a handout. This isn't the program where the guy with the bullhorn that annoys you on the TV show yells for the bus to pull away, and that's the first time the family sees the home.
Mm-hmm.
These are folks who have been there. They saw the lot from the very beginning. We're developers. You know, they're picking a lot that they like in an area of town that they like. picking from one of our models that they like. So it really is about empowerment. Does it address a shortage out there when we have thousands upon thousands of families living in substandard housing? No, but we do them one at a time.
Sarah in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Sarah. You have a question for E.J. Thomas?
Yeah, I had a disappointing experience. I had a whole over 1,100 square feet of cherry floor and some, you know, brand new cans of paint and materials to donate, but I couldn't find any takers. I was so excited to give them to Habitat for Humanity, and they said no thanks. So I gave them to somebody who sold them and pocketed the money. That's how I got rid of them. How can you put together people who can't deliver the, you know, good quality, you know, room-sized goods and these agencies?
Well, I appreciate your call. I don't know how long ago that happened, but Jared, our store director, carries a cell phone. And,
That hurts, doesn't it?
That he would turn that down. We're getting ready to open a second store on the west side of town. We send trucks out all the time to pick up flooring and other goods. In fact, we just brought in about 6 or 7 pallets of 2x2 carpet tiles. So we're always interested in that. And I don't know what happened. I don't know where the disconnect was.
Okay.
EJ, why don't you tell them a little bit more about the Restore?
That's a good idea.
Yeah, thank you. You know, most everybody knows about Habitat for Humanity, but about 95% of the folks who know about Habitat don't know about the Restore. We take donated goods, primarily construction and home-related, and then resell them to the general public. We keep about 1,600 tons of material out of the landfill every year, and we sell to folks who then use these products in their own home, and we price them in such a way that they're really affordable. So we're helping the patrons who many times can't afford to go to the regular stores and buy things. And as a result, the net from the operation takes out all of our administrative costs, so that if someone comes to us and says, look, we've got $10,000 to put into a partial sponsorship or $100,000 to sponsor a full home, all of those dollars go to the program of putting a deserving family into a home. So it's a great way for us related to sustainable income. And as a member of U.S. Council here for Habitat International, we're pushing as many of our 1,500 affiliates across the country as possible to look very seriously at opening up a store, because, as you know, everybody on the program today knows, there's a kind of a sine wave of funding and grant cycles, and when you're in a trough, it makes it tough to provide the services that you want to provide. And so the store for us is it provides us a dynamic where we can help to really smooth that out.
Stacy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Stacy.
Hi, thank you. My question was just, I wanted to know a little bit more about Habitat for Humanity, and how would I go about trying to apply for that?
Sure. Stacy, you can come up on our website, habitatcolumbus.org, and there is an application that you can fill out and an email or drop it off, and we'll take a look at your situation.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Stacy.
Thank
good
you.
Luck. And Bill in Clinton Township, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, good morning. I called to ask about a possible instance around the country where Habitat Humanity is working with variations of this, either state-funded or federally funded, what's called an employer of last resort. During the Depression, it was WPA and that sort of thing. But if the government was to finally say one way to get people to work is just to hire them to do something, is there any instances where Habitat for Humanity is integrating its program with a state-funded employer of last resort kind of program?
E.J. Thomas?
Fair question, yes. Not that I'm aware of. Now, we do have volunteer opportunities for anyone and everyone who would like to give us a try. And one of the things that we've done for some folks who have been out of work, especially, you know, the longer you're out of work, the harder it is then to get to find employment, because people look at that that period of time when you haven't been working, and that's kind of a negative.
Mm-hmm.
So for folks, we're going to be doing this for veterans. if they want to come and work with us and show us that they have the right kind of attitude that an employer would be looking for, you know, I'll write a letter recommendation for them and help them in that way to find employment on the outside.
Okay, Bill, thanks for that call. Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Yeah, thanks. I just want to quickly emphasize Bill Faith's point about the federal policy aspect of this. Just within the last week or so, the president signed a bill, a 2012 funding bill, that cut one of the major housing programs by 38%. It's by comparison with how much money we're spending on defense and every place else, there's not a lot of money going into housing, and people really need to pay attention to this and talk to their elected officials.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
That's a great point, Ann. I'm fortunate to chair the Advocacy Committee for Habitat International. One of the things that we do out of our office in D.C. is work collaboratively with other housing providers, low-income housing providers, on things like the SHOP funds, Section 4, and home funds, to which the gentleman has referred. And you're right. In the budget, they have taken a hit. And what we've been doing, along with a number of other organizations, is to try and ring the bell loudly enough to let folks know that this is a really pretty good expenditure of dollars, and we can make some pretty efficient use out of them out here in the hinterlands.
Lisa? Well,
in the federal fiscal year 2011 budget, one of the impacts that really is exacerbating the problem that we have right now was an 80% cut in a program called the Emergency Food and Shelter Funds. These were dollars that were used for homelessness prevention, for shelter expenses, as well as for emergency food at the local level. And in this state, many of the small rural counties where there are few resources, their allocations were cut by some 80%. And it is having a significant impact on the ability to meet the need.
And I will second that. I will tell you what we're seeing on the local level is those funds run out very, very quickly. And then folks end up in a more expensive solution, which is coming into the homeless system and then having to get rehoused. And I think we need to stop being so short-sighted on our policies, and we need to get upstream on these. There's very cost-effective, efficient ways to handle these issues, and if we don't, we're going to end up paying one way or the other, and the cost is much more deep when you get very close to the safety net, close to the ground.
Michelle Heritage, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Michelle Heritage, she's Executive Director of the Community Shelter Board. E.J. Thomas, thanks for joining us on such short notice.
Glad to be with you, Ann.
E.J. Thomas, CEO for the Habitat for Humanity of Greater Columbus. Lisa Hamler-Fugit of Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, and happy holidays.
Thanks to, and as well to you. And Bill Faith of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, thanks for joining us again, Bill.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Happy Thanksgiving. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.